Amari Cooper not thrilled with the media. Do we have the whole exchange? We do. Everybody, stop what you're doing and listen to Amari.
Can you weigh in on sort of the freeze frame issue that a lot of people have been talking about this week with Deshaun for missing Jordan Akins on that 4th-and-1 and showing a freeze frame of Jordan supposedly?
I haven't seen. I don't even know what you're talking about. Honestly, I don't. I haven't seen what you're talking about, so I don't know. I can't really give any commentary on it.
Yeah, I'm basically just asking in general. People seem to criticize or comment on what happens on a particular play.
Right.
Is it not always what it seems like?
Like I said, I haven't seen that particular thing that you're talking about, but I mean, it's football at the end of the day. You know, some plays you're going to make, some plays you aren't going to make. I assume that's what they're getting at. It's just like anybody else who has a job. Some of y'all don't ask the best questions, but hey, you don't hear me criticizing. So, yeah, I think it's just the nature of the business. I mean, obviously we get scrutinized more than you guys do. So, I mean, I think maybe y'all should start asking questions in front of the camera so they can see y'all's faces. But yeah, I just think that's just how it goes. You know, they see everything we do. We're under a microscope, so we're going to get scrutinized more and for mistakes that everybody makes. So.
But on that play, Amari, Deshaun said that Akins was a decoy on that play. So can he throw the ball to a decoy if he's open?
Again, I really haven't seen the freeze frame that you guys are referring to, so I don't know.
But in general, can a quarterback throw the ball to a DB?
It's a better question for a quarterback to answer, to be honest. I don't know. He knows the reads better than I do, so you have to ask Deshaun.
Tone, thoughts?
There's a lot there. And, you know, I want to make sure people understand. Amari is kind of smiling throughout that whole answer, so I think he... Since he's been here in Cleveland, he has been awesome to the media. He has been somebody great to talk to. I don't believe him that he doesn't know the reads. I mean, he's a veteran in this league. I bet you that guy could go through and outline what the offensive linemen are supposed to do on every play. I think he's being a little coy there. I think he's frustrated. I mean, understandably so. This has been a weird year for him all the way around. He didn't get the contract that he wanted. People wondered if that spilled over to the first couple games where he had these uncharacteristic drops. Came back, and he looked like Amari Cooper last game. I mean, he really did. You almost wanted him to be involved in the offense a little bit more. I think it's got to be frustrating to talk about freeze frames. I mean, that's silly. Nobody breaks down football in a freeze frame world in the actual sport. But the actual plays, which I've seen a bunch of breakdowns, it leads a lot of people to wonder what either... What was Watson looking at, or what is he being coached to do? And I think that's why the media asks Akins that question. That's why they asked Deshaun Watson. That's why they asked Ken Dorsey, and we're going to play that a little bit later on. And that's why Amari Cooper is getting asked about it, because it doesn't seem like they have their story straight on that one. We're getting kind of incoherent responses across the board on this. And I think fans just want to know, hey, just level with us. Like, what are you seeing out there, and what are you guys being coached to do? Because you had a guy wide open on a big fourth and one that you didn't convert and you lost a game. It's pretty significant play. Everywhere in the NFL, these players are being asked about significant plays. That was a significant play. It wasn't the only significant play. Obviously, you had a huge monumental drop on a perfect pass from Deshaun, and you got to make those count. I mean, when he throws one perfect and it's there, you got to make him count. But this is standard stuff in the NFL. Amari knows that. I mean, guys are going to be asked. I mean, he kind of took a cheap shot there about, you know, hey, well, let's put the cameras on you guys. I mean, everybody knows who's asking those questions. I mean, everybody listening right now knows exactly who those guys are.
I'm fine with them taking a cheap shot. As a media member, we take cheap shots every now and then. Mm-hmm. There's been times where I'm like, man, I wish it would have gone that far. So I got no problem with it. We all say things, and it's not where I'm saying we all say things we don't mean. He can certainly mean it and go right on ahead. I think he's annoyed. I think he's very annoyed that he has to sit there and answer those questions. And
well, it's already Friday.
He may or may not be responsible for any of that stuff. It's been a tumultuous beginning of the year for him, and he went out and he had a good game. They still lost the game. He's frustrated by it. I think this whole year has been a frustration to him, and he dealt with it as best he could. He didn't get vulgar, red-faced, or really angry, or any of the other stuff. It was done with a smile, and I have a great deal of respect for Amari.
He's one of my favorites since the station's been on.
But it's also, and you know, that's another one of the things too. It's like let's be honest, if it were Deshaun, like next week, if he were to do something like that, it's open season. It's open season. Amari Cooper has a ton of credit with Browns fans and with Browns media, and you know we like him. And so he says those things, and we go, yeah, no big deal. If it were a lot of other guys, we'd probably have a problem with it. We'd probably have a sincere problem with it. Again, if it were Deshaun Watson, I think people would have a sincere problem with it. So it all comes from who's saying it. He's a guy who can say it. Miles is a guy who can say it. Nick Chubb is sure as hell a guy who can say it. There's guys who can't. I mean, honestly, if Will said the same sentence, what do you think people would be doing right now? They'd want him out of town on the first thing smoking. So there's guys who can say it and guys who can't. Amari can, and he may be. And honestly, Amari be speaking for the entire locker room this week.
Yeah,
when he was saying that,
they sound frustrated. They do,
because
they should be. They're 1-2.
Every question has been about whether or not your quarterback can read a defense, and there have been people who know a hell of a lot more about football than us saying he can't. He can't read a defense, and it bothers me to my core. To my core, I don't want to hear that. It bothers me to hear it. And just because it's like, well, you guys keep asking the question. Well, that's the time that they march these people out in front of us, which is the natural order of things. But because you can't get a satisfactory answer, because you really can't tell the truth, it seems, for a lot of people, it's an uncomfortable truth to hear. And I think a lot of people just don't want to hear it, so they want us all to move on. That's what I think a lot of people want to do.
Yeah,
including him.
The thing was, it's really unnecessary. I mean, I watch how Patrick Mahomes, and now granted, they're 3-0. I've looked up past Joe Burrow moments, and these controversies, they pop up all over the NFL. But you can also basically take them out in one sentence. You can. All Deshaun Watson had to do at the start of the week was say, "Yeah, I need to get better. I made a mistake. We need to get better. That's on me." Even if it's not true, when a quarterback says that, it ends it. It ends the controversy. And quarterbacks do it all the time.
They do.
Coaches do it all the time. Coaches, you know how many times Stefanski has said,
"That's
on me.
That's on me. We got to coach better."
When the minute the media is away and they are behind closed doors, they are slamming the table going, "Why couldn't the idiot run that route? Or why couldn't this guy pass?"
Like, I cannot tell you.
They're doing it all the time. It's a coach's room.
It hasn't happened with Kevin because he's very quiet. I'll tell you right now, that's happened with several other guys, including a guy who didn't like me. That after these things are all said and done, let me tell you about what really happened. And it's usually after some of these players are gone, but that's exactly how that stuff goes.
This is so textbook dealing with the media 101, and you would expect veteran guys to be able to understand that. But you create something where there might not be necessarily that much of a controversy behind the scenes. Guys, it's one play. You didn't convert a 4th-and-1. I mean, that's that after you had a chance on 3rd-and-1, Jameis couldn't convert. But you can make this stuff go away with one sentence. And they didn't do it. And instead, we're still talking about it. And it's Friday.
Mary Kay Cabot, she's getting ready to join us on the North Homestead Chrysler Jeep Dodge Ram Hotline as the Browns take on the Raiders on Sunday, which it should feel maybe like a home game for the Cleveland Browns out there, which, according to the audio that we were hearing, might not be such a great thing for the quarterback when you think about it. But let's talk about it with Mary Kay Cabot on the North Homestead Chrysler Jeep Dodge Ram Hotline. She's from the Cleveland Plain Dealer in Cleveland.com. Hello, Mary Kay.
Hey, guys. How you doing?
We're doing okay. Is quarterback going to be able to pull the nose up on this thing, or are we in some trouble?
Well, I think he's going to have to be kept upright. He's going to have to be protected. That will help. Hopefully for them, Jed will be able to play, and Jack will be able to play, or at least play some. We know Wyatt is out. So I don't think it's going to be easy from a protection standpoint. But they're just going to have to find a way to get the job done. I mean, I think it's good that he was able to get his rhythm back with Amari Cooper, and he already had some with Jerry Jeudy, so they should be able to run some offense this game.
Mary Kay, what did you think of the decoy conversation yesterday? And Kenny, I'm not talking about the cab that they make. Ooh, it is splendid. Mary Kay would know that. You can get a good wine. Decoy. It's actually out there. Anyway, Jordan Akins was wide open on that 4th-and-1. What do you make of the conversation from the Browns players afterwards?
You know what? I mean, why not take Deshaun at what he's saying? They had an RPO called. He was supposed to read certain things. He read his keys. He went through the progression and felt that he needed to pull it in and try to run it there when the slant wasn't there. So, you know, I do think there's something to be said for being careful about the whole freeze frame game that people do. I you know, it's hard for me to sit here and say, oh, he absolutely should have thrown it there. When he knows what he's told to do, he knows what's in the headset, he knows what the plan is on that play. So I do, all the players are saying the same thing, but it's easy to say it should have gone here, it should have gone there, when, you know, we don't know what the call is, we don't know what the read is.
I mean, Mary-Kate, do you think Deshaun sees the field well right now, or well enough to play this position at the highest level?
Yes, I do. I do. What I think is going on in this offense, I think it's a number of things. I think it's a lot of things, including the fact that they have a brand new offense. They really haven't gotten it together yet. And he's coming off shoulder surgery. I think it took Amari Cooper two games into his third game before he was feeling comfortable doing everything and getting his rhythm with Deshaun. And then the protection has been poor. It's just, I mean, he's been sacked 16 times and hit 42 times. And then you have to factor in the defense has put them in a hole in both of those losses, 20-3 at halftime against the Cowboys and 21-7 against the Giants. So how are you going to operate like that? It's very, very difficult when you're down to be able to have a viable run game. It's just been a mess. There's no question that it's been a mess, but to pin it on Deshaun, I just think that's an oversimplification.
Mary-Kate Cabot joining us on the North Homestead Chrysler Jeep Dodge Ram Hotline. So we've had a lot of people on the phones who have talked about replacing him. When, if ever, would the organization ever think about such a thing?
You know, like I said, now is not the time. I mean, think about this. Everybody's looking at QBR. Everybody's looking at rating. The Browns have dropped 10 passes so far. That's most in the NFL. If that number was even cut in half and a couple of those touchdown passes were caught by Amari Cooper in each of the first couple of games, those numbers are dramatically different. So, you know, there are just so many things going on this offense right now that are widespread. It's not all Deshaun. And I think that Kevin's been trying to tell everybody that. I think everybody's been trying to say that. So give the offense some time. That's what it needs. It needs a little bit of time to come together. And I just think there's hysteria going on. I really do. You know, the sky is not falling right now. If everyone stays healthy, this offense should be playing its best ball in November and December, and that's what you want. David Njoku hasn't even been out there. That's hurt them a lot. I mean, he's one of their top two targets. I mean, if you look around the league and you take out your top two targets for the first couple of games, it's probably not going to go as well as anybody wanted it to.
What's the offensive line going to look like on Sunday? How many? What do you think the personnel is going to be?
It's tough to say. I mean, if they get desperate enough, they might have to put Joel back out there at left tackle, or at least be ready to slide him back over there in a pinch. So I would say that they're hoping either Jed or Jack can play over there, and then I would think Zach Zinter in Wyatt Teller's place, and then they've got to hope that DeWand feels better. DeWand has been fighting through. I've been trying to capture this. I've seen that DeWand hasn't been himself really since training camp, and he has been fighting through his knee injury.
I think he's hurt. I think he's hurt. Some people have been calling him heavy over the air or online, and I think that's unfair. I think he's been hurt.
He doesn't look any bigger to me than he looked last year. I think he is struggling with the knee and with the shoulder, and you know, I do think that those things have impacted him. So let's see what he's able to do over there. But certainly, you can attack the edges when you know that your guys are not healthy. That hasn't helped matters, but they have to find a way to combat it. That's it. I mean, they just can't say, oh, geez, we've got three guys coming off of knee surgeries and we can't protect Deshaun. I mean, you have to find a way to get the job done. And as far as the whole identity piece, I am not an identity person when it comes to you have to be jumbo, you have to be play action, you have to be spread. I just don't think that's true. I think you can be multiple, show multiple looks. Your identity can come from how fast you play or how hard you play or how multiple you can be or those kinds of things. I don't think that this offense is in an identity crisis. I think it's in an execution crisis.
Mary Kay Cabot with us on the hotline. Are we going to have a running game this year? And if not, until Nick Chubb comes back, when is that going to be?
Well, they had a running game last year, even without Nick Chubb. So, yes, I do think they're going to have a running game. Once again, I think it is difficult to run the ball when you're down 20-3 and when you're down 21-7. So you have to stay in the game to keep a running game going. So that's one thing. This team that they're playing, the Raiders, are 29th against the run. So this is a game in which you should be able to run the ball if, once again, you don't dig yourself a hole in the first quarter. So the defense has to play better. The defense has gotten too much of a pass. We know they've pulled it together in the second half of both games that they've lost, but that's a little bit too little, a little bit too late. I mean, by then, teams can pin their ears back and absolutely come after you. So the defense has got to do its part as well in this whole situation. But I do think that they will have a running game when the offensive linemen are a little bit healthier and when everything gets rolling.
Mary Kay, Jerry Jeudy, how have you enjoyed the Jerry Jeudy experience so far?
I like the Jerry Jeudy experience. I like the player. I like the person. I really think that he's going to be really good for this team. I think he meshes with Deshaun when it comes to the scramble drills and just field vision and those kinds of things. So I think as this goes along, I think it will prove to be a very good acquisition.
Well, because I was asked this question like in the hallway the other day, and Lima was with me, and I said, well, honestly, I think I've said it on the air. I like Jerry Jeudy so far. I think it's been a welcome addition. And Lima did the math. He goes, he's on pace for like 600 yards this year. I'm like, well, I'm sorry. Right now, I'm looking at it, and I think it's a pretty good addition right now with Jerry Jeudy over here. You want to speak up for yourself there, Tone?
No, I just...
Sounded like I was taking shots at you.
No, I said when we went over this on the podcast, I'm just like, man, if those are the numbers by the end of the year, I think fans are going to just wish we would have been able to maybe find one of these guys in the draft, because you can find these guys in the draft for very little money.
Can the Browns find these guys in the draft, Anthony?
Oh, God.
Exactly. Thank you very much. Go ahead, Mary Kay.
It's not good either.
Well,
not great, but here we are.
The passing game is 30th in the NFL, so nobody's going to have good numbers right now. As I've said before, the passing game has not gotten rolling yet. I think it will get a lot better. I know it will get a lot better when David Njoku is back, when all of the weapons are out there, when Deshaun is more comfortable in this offense, when he is on the same page with the receivers. A lot of times when you're looking out there and you're seeing what looks like a completely errant pass, sometimes that's a choice route where the wide receiver and the quarterback were not on the same page at all. And I think that that's one of the things that Deshaun was trying to say yesterday, that if he could have one takeaway from the first three games, is that he wishes that he were on the same page more with his receivers. And so they do have to do that. But it's hard to get on the same page when everything is compressed in a time frame because you don't have time to throw the ball, because you can't run the ball. It just hasn't come together yet. Let's see what we're talking about in November and December. If Deshaun is horrible in November and December and everyone is healthy, then I think that you have a crisis. Right now, I don't think they're in crisis mode.
Mary Kay, we had Rodney McLeod in on Tuesday for an hour. It was must watch and listen radio. We'll have him on every single week throughout the year. And he gave great perspective on their defense, on how it doesn't matter if Malik Nabers or if it's Davante Adams or Jerry Rice in his prime, they are not going to play matchup defense, meaning Denzel Ward's going to be on one side and Emerson's going to be on the other, regardless of how they're doing. Do you think that is the right attack defensively?
Well, they'll have to see how it goes as they move forward. If they continue to give up plays like they did to Malik Nabers, then no, it's not going to be the right strategy going forward. And I think some of it might be right now, too, and I don't know for sure. We can maybe ask Jim Schwartz this today. Denzel Ward has been injured with his shoulder injury, so he's really been having a tough time doing the job that, you know, that we've all seen him do. So that could be factoring in right now. But if the side-to-side thing isn't working, then certainly you have to change it up. You have to pivot and adjust as you move forward.
Mary Kay Cabot joining us here on the North Homestead Chrysler Jeep Dodge Ram Hotline. Yeah, it seems like, is that such a insult to their sense to their senses that we bracket a great wide receiver? Because I'm like, I don't want Devontae Adams to beat us on Sunday. I think we let Malik Nabers beat us last Sunday. I don't want to do that again.
Well, for whatever reason, I just didn't think Martin played his best game either.
No,
and I think that's the case with a number of the defenders. Now, we know that Myles Garrett is hurting and ailing, and I think that's a big storyline heading into these next few weeks. This is the first of three straight road games, and Myles Garrett is pretty hobbled with his feet, his Achilles, his thigh. When your best player on defense is hurting, that's going to have a trickle-down effect on the defense. So he's probably not at his best. And then I didn't think Martin played his best. I didn't necessarily think JOK played his best. I thought there were a number of missed tackles. And so that's a side of the ball that needs attention. I mean, these guys have got to pick it up. Like I said, I think they've gotten a little bit of a pass because they've pulled it together both games, both losses. But they need to start faster, and they need to tighten things up, however that is. But like you said, Devontae Adams, I mean, he can hurt them. And Gardner Minshew, everyone saw last year how scrappy he is. He's a fighter. This is gut check time for the Raiders. They were called out by their coach. So, you know, when you're facing a team that's in that situation, they're going to bring their A game, and the Browns have got to be ready for it.
Myles Garrett, does he need some time off to get rested, to get healed up, or is he going to play this week no matter what?
Well, he is expected to play this week. Kevin told us that yesterday, and we heard from Miles that he'll have to be dragged off the field. So I think he'll play as long as he can until the medical staff tells him that he needs to rest or he needs a procedure or something like that. It should make everyone a little bit nervous when you're talking about an Achilles, because if something more serious happens to that Achilles, then, of course, he would be out for the season or probably out for the season. So they have to keep an eye on that. They have to monitor it. And if he can't get through this game and it's obvious he needs some time, then they're going to have to really seriously think about doing that.
Have you ever been out to dinner with another couple and they started bickering with each other and it got awkward? And does it seem like Anthony and I are like that sometimes when you're on the phone with us?
No, not at all. I like a little bit of tension. And no, I really haven't been out with another couple when they started bickering like that. But with you guys, I enjoy a little bit of that tension.
Yeah, it's nice. Mary Kay, thank you very much for the time. All the best.
Thank you, guys.
Mary Kay Cabot on the North Homestead Chrysler Jeep Dodge Ram Hotline.
That was a heck of a speech right there, D.
I moved to tears. I need a tissue.
As you should be.
I bet you are.
As you should be.
I bet
be.
You are. Well, congratulations to our pal Andy for being inducted into the Cleveland Heights High School Hall of Fame, along with the
and
Kelsey
60
brothers.
60 seconds of our lives we are not getting back.
And, basket overruled. You can't ask that question.
And Sean Young, fabulous actress. All right, now let's go ahead and talk about the Browns' offensive line, Daryl.
Do we really have to?
I am wondering.
I mean, I can try to find more Andy bites for you if you want.
Insta, whatever. Insta face, snap face, whatever.
Okay, so let me. Batonio, left guard. Posick, center. Zinter, right guard. I'm good there, right?
I think.
Okay. And Zinter, of course, in for Wyatt Teller. Wyatt's on the IR with his injury, and that's a shame because we all like Wyatt, and he's a good player. What are you thinking at left tackle? What are you thinking at right tackle? Even when these, like, DeJuan hasn't looked healthy, and Jed went back out there, I don't know if he was, whatever. What do you think happens there at the tackle spots?
I think they start with both of those guys and then take it from there. Go as long as they can go. We talked to Jed yesterday. Sure sounds like he's going to give it a go this week. DeJuan Jones also talked yesterday. I was talking to another player while he was speaking, but look back at what he had to say, and he indicated that he's going to, you know, try and give it a go as well. Jack Conklin's not going to be available. Obviously, James Hudson, you know, he practiced yesterday. Jermaine Ifedi was brought up from the practice squad to the active roster. to provide additional insurance there. But I really do think that they're going to start with Jed and DeJuan and then hope both of those guys, their knees are able to hold up and get through the game.
So you believe that Jack Conklin will not be playing on Sunday?
No. No. He's got a hamstring injury. Hamstring injuries don't heal in a week.
You're not incorrect to say such things. It was just one of those that hit me in that moment. I was like, oh, boy, that's not ideal. Do you think that there's more offensive line help that could possibly come from outside of the organization, maybe not for this week, but moving forward?
Well, I mean, they signed two guys yesterday to the practice squad, so that's your offensive line help outside the organization.
Riddle me this one. Do you think Jack would have been able to go had he not tweaked his hamstring? In other words, is his knee back to where it needs to be?
Yeah, like the plan was for him to return last week. And then on Friday, he got a hamstring injury and woke up Saturday and it wasn't great. And so they ended up ruling him out. So, everything was on track for that to happen. It didn't happen. So, they find themselves in the situation they find themselves in.
The Raiders are not a real good football situation as well right now. And Andy Dalton gets put in at Carolina and goes out and puts up 36 points, over 300 yards, three passing touchdowns against the Las Vegas Raiders. What does that mean for Deshaun Watson and the Browns offense this week?
They better show up and they better come to play. I mean, look, they come into this game ranked 25th in scoring, 31st in yards per game, 24th running the ball, and 30th passing the ball. It's been terrible. You had one game where they couldn't get a first down in the first half. You had another game where they couldn't get across midfield in the first half. It's been a domino effect. The thing that concerns me the most, it's not just one thing. You have offensive line protection problems. You have offensive line health problems. You have quarterback timing problems. You have quarterback pressure problems. You have receivers doing what the quarterback supposedly thinks that they're supposed to be doing when they're supposed to do it problems. You've got running game problems. There's problems everywhere offensively. It's not a situation where it's like, oh, well, if they fix this one thing, everything's fine. I don't know that all gets fixed in the middle of a season. I asked Ken Dorsey that this morning. He gave me a two-minute answer. A lot of it was word salad, but back pretty much the entire press conference is word salad. But, that's what has me concerned here is there isn't one thing offensively. It's been a domino effect, and it feels like the dominoes keep falling. So you're right. The Raiders, not a great football team. This is an opportunity for the Browns to go out to Las Vegas and get well, so to speak, offensively, right? And if they're not able to do that against the Raiders, then I'm really going to get nervous about the prospects of not only just what this offense is going to be able to achieve, but just, the season as a whole.
Our Cleveland sports reporter, Darrell Ryder, joining us on the North Olmsted Chrysler Jeep Dodge Ram Hotline. Of course, all of his hits powered by Scheiben Jewelers, Cleveland's premier jewelry store. Darrell, this is going to sound like a really rudimentary question, but I feel like it's the thing that is most missing from this offense. Does this offense even have an identity right now outside of just malfunction?
No, it doesn't. There is no identity. And honestly, I can't even tell you what the identity is supposed to be. That might also be part of the problem. You know what I mean? I honestly can't. So, it doesn't have an identity, and I have no idea what that identity is supposed to be at this point. I didn't see it in training camp, and this start to the season doesn't surprise me because it's exactly what I observed during training camp, and everyone called me a hater. So,
let me ask you something. Dan and I just kicked around. You move on from Alex Van Pelt. You bring in Ken Dorsey. Did you bring in Ken Dorsey, and are they trying to design an offense that works better for Deshaun Watson? Or are you just trying to design a better offense for the Cleveland Browns? And I'm wondering what, if Kevin Stefanski likes that kind of an offense more than the kind they ran before, or what? because it goes back to that identity and everything else, and we're all kind of wondering. But I'm curious, are they really trying to tailor something for Deshaun, or are they just trying to do a different type of offense, or what?
The answer to part one of your question, yes, this was all done for Deshaun. They have $230 million invested in this guy. Yes, they fired Alex Van Pelt and hired Ken Dorsey for Deshaun Watson. Okay. The second part of that is, the Kevin Stefanski offense was what we saw with Joe Flacco. Like, you know, the offense that actually worked, where they, you know, got first downs, had explosive plays, could run the football, and also, you know, score points.
We would have put a rim shot in there if it weren't true.
Yeah, like that was the Kevin Stefanski offense. Obviously, Deshaun Watson does not play the game like Joe Flacco did, or, you know, does, right? So you have to, and this isn't a criticism, like they had to do this. You had to, and it probably should have been done before, but you had to try and configure things for Deshaun. He's your quarterback. You know, what Joe did last year is immaterial to this season. So you can't run the concepts and stuff like that, that Flacco ran, and expect it to be run by Deshaun. Here's the other part of that, too. And I asked Ken Dorsey this as well. I think part of the reason the offensive line is struggling, aside from the injury factor, right, is I think that the blocking scheme is completely different. You know, they used to do a lot of pull and pin. They don't do a lot of that now this year. It was that wide zone blocking scheme. They're not doing a lot of that this year. So I am wondering if, while, you know, the line, the guys they have are good, right? I'm wondering if they have the right players for the scheme. Yeah, again, I'm just like spitballing my head trying to figure out why this thing's turned into a train wreck 3 weeks into the season, aside from the fact that everyone's hurt.
Daryl, I just spitballed the same thing last segment. I was wondering the same exact thing, and I got to find somebody smarter than me to get that answer.
Again, all I can do is ask the question. I can't control the answer. I couldn't begin to decipher what Ken Dorsey told me. So, it's not great right now. And like, you know, as you guys have been alluding to, there is an opportunity this weekend to go out to Vegas and really get right. Hopefully DeJuan's knee is okay. Hopefully Jed's knee is okay, and those guys can hold up. Zach Zinter is going to be in there for Wyatt Teller for the next 4 weeks. Knock on wood, right? He's, you know, but he just, after going back, he looked fine to me. Watching, I think he did a nice job when he stepped in for Wyatt there. But I kind of feel like I hate using must win, but I almost feel like this is a must win for this football team Sunday.
Daryl, thank you, buddy. Appreciate it.
Chris Rose is going to join us here. That was Andrew Siciliano talking about the offensive line. And, we're all looking at it, and I know what he said about the Raiders, but in the back of my mind, that stupid any given Sunday, and they're at home. They're using scotch tape and rubber bands to put together an offensive line this week when you consider how many guys are hurt. And it's just a concern. I wonder how they're going to adjust. I wonder how they're going to be able to. And maybe this is the best week possible to play a team like the Raiders, but I don't know. I just don't take anything for granted in this league.
Not at all?
No, I don't. I watched Dallas the first week of the season, and I was like, what? And then the next week they go into New Orleans, and my head is spinning. Then I watch, and I'm like, okay, well, maybe New Orleans is awesome. You know, they put like 80-some points on the board the first 2 weeks, and then last week they play Philly, and all of a sudden they came back to reality. But they have 6 points in that game. So I don't know what to expect, and I expect the unexpected in the NFL, and maybe that's exactly the way they want us to view the sport, because it sucks you in and doesn't let you go. And you know, you could sit here all week and think your team is horrible and they stink and your quarterback is brutal and your head coach has no idea what he's doing. And then they put together a good game, and it doesn't matter if they're first team or the last team in the NFL, according to rankings. A win is a win in this league, and I just you cherish it. And all of a sudden you look, and how do you think Steeler fans feel? They got to be sitting there going, are we for real? Are we for real? But they're playing mistake-free football, and that's why they're able to accomplish what they're able to do with a strong defense. So I don't know. I'm going to feel uneasy at all points of the season. And even if you tell me the Browns are going to win by 150 this week, I'm still going to be uneasy about it.
What's NFL stand for?
Not for long.
That's exactly what everybody says.
Mm-hmm.
And I think that really is true about perception of your team and what people think of your team. And that could be good or bad. You know, you get hot, all of a sudden, oh, but you're the greatest thing ever. For instance, the Minnesota Vikings. Eric Edholm, who has been on our show before, and Eric's a really good writer for NFL.com, has his power rankings out right now.
Mm-hmm.
And after week three. And first of all, he completely confirms what we talked about yesterday. Who are the best two teams? Who do you think are the two best teams in the league?
Kansas City and Buffalo, without a doubt, right now.
He has them 1 and 2.
Yeah.
And Buffalo's up two spots to number two. Then he has the Vikings at number three. And, okay, Vikings jump. Are you ready?
That makes you feel pretty good, doesn't it?
Well, just because you won, you started 3-0, they've jumped 12 spots all the way up to number three. And, see, that's what we talked about yesterday. After those top two teams, Kansas City, Buffalo, who is it? Well, okay, and we even said, let's see more out of Minnesota. There's nobody else who's really knocking down the door who's making you think that's the case. Detroit moved up one spot to number four. So, I mean, after Buffalo and Kansas City, man, it gets, I think.
It's murky, right?
It's wide open.
And I can understand why you put Minnesota in there, because they're undefeated.
If you're looking at our division, Ravens are eighth right now in Ed Holmes' power rankings. And then the Steelers are ninth. They jump up five spots. Why? Their defense is really pretty good. So 8 and 9 for those two teams. And you keep scrolling down. The Niners dropped from 2 to 12.
Wow.
This is just, this is completely, boy, not for long. You play a bad game, boom, you're getting busted. Chargers dropped 7 spots down to number 14. You notice we haven't talked about anybody in particular yet. Commanders had one nice game against the Bengals, right?
Yeah.
They jumped 12 spots from 28 to 16.
They showed up in primetime. That's why.
To me, this is a little, and I think Eric's a really good writer, this is a little reactionary.
Yeah, but maybe.
I think it's all reactionary.
If Jaden Daniels is finally kind of getting his feet in the ground and you want to give him two games to get ready for it.
Okay, you jump from 28 to 16. One game jumps you from being one of the worst teams in the league to middle of the pack. Okay.
Well, who's behind them?
Well, a lot of teams. Your Dallas Cowboys.
Hmm.
They dropped 6, so that's not good. We're down to 19. Rams. Notice who I haven't mentioned yet.
No, I know who you
Bengals
haven't mentioned.
Dropped 5 games. There are 5 spots down to 21. Notice who I haven't mentioned yet.
Yeah, I know, but the Bengals' defense is what their record is. That their offense is
3.
Not.
Dolphins don't have Tua. Dolphins drop 8 to 25.
The Dolphins don't have a quarterback.
Notice who I haven't mentioned yet.
Yeah, I know.
At 26 in Eric Edholm's power rankings, our Cleveland Browns dropping 8 spots.
Mm.
And he starts it fairly. A crisis has now turned into an epidemic. And he's talking offensive line. He's right about that. And then he talks about Deshaun, and he said, a strange, troubling start to the season in Cleveland. You want to make it worse for a strange, troubling start?
Sure.
Team the Browns play this week, the Raiders ranked 28th. Does that make this a must-win?
No, I just...
Giants are 29th. Giants beat the Browns and move up two spots, but they're still 29th.
That makes it worse.
Jaguars drop 7 to 30. So 3 of the top 4 opponents for the Browns to start the season are ranked right now 28th, 29th, and 30th. Man, you better win this game.
Wow, the Jags have lost 8 straight with Trevor Lawrence.
Boy, and Trevor's getting berated on all fronts, and maybe deservedly so. Did you see the story that came out about him yesterday? Florio on Pro Football Talk went back and some old comments from Trevor were dragged up, and he made sure that everybody had a clear thought on those. But it was that Trevor Lawrence basically said, my life is not all about football, and I can have a wonderful life without football. And people took that the wrong way.
How long ago did he say it?
It was when it came out in the draft, and he was the number one overall pick. But he then clarified and said, hey, look, I love this stuff. I work hard. I love it as much as anybody else. But, you know, it's not all that defines me. Good for him. I think that's fair. I do. But I also think he better start playing better.
Well, I also think that it was fair in the power rankings on NFL.com when they said Deshaun Watson and the Browns had zero answers for the Giants' pressure packages. They didn't. And he was sacked eight times on 45 dropbacks. Watson has held on to the ball too long. Fair criticism. No argument there. But not every sack is on him. I like the fact that that was a part of the piece. The Browns simply don't have the offensive identity with all of these issues. And Sunday provided proof that their strong defense can't bail them out of trouble every single week. A strange, troubling start to the season in Cleveland. I mean, very fair. And do you think do you think they should be higher than 26? They dropped 8 spots.
Well, I do, probably. I do. And the reason I say that is because I just think that these rankings are a little reactionary. I mean, one win, one loss shouldn't drop you or elevate you as much as he has elevated guys. But it's at this very moment is what he's basing this on. And so, you know, you could make the argument at this very moment. Like, for instance, the Broncos got a win, and a good win, over Tampa. They jumped up 8 spots. You know, I mean, that's a lot. The one thing I think we all need to keep in mind here, do you remember for many years the New England Patriots had serious, serious offensive line issues?
Yeah.
And they were getting guys injured. They weren't, you know, they're just trying to put pieces in there. They're bringing guys in and blah, 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 and they kept winning. They had offensive line issues, and they made it work. At some point here, you're not going to be able to just keep saying about the Browns, and not that anybody's completely using it as an excuse. At some point, you're going to have to just deal with it and figure it out. Otherwise, just go ahead and pitch the whole season. I mean, okay, your offensive line's beat up. Well, then figure it out. Your quarterback has to get the ball out more. Maybe you have to run. Maybe you have to run wide. Maybe you run pass option.
Maybe run more screens.
Figure something out. I mean, you can't just sit there and go, well, our line's beat up. Let's drop him back in the pocket and have him stand there for 7 seconds. And Deshaun, you go ahead and hang on to it for another 2 more. You can't do that. At some point, it has to be figured out. Okay, this is the reality. How do we deal with the reality? Patriots did it for years. But, of course, the Patriots had somebody at quarterback who got the ball out in about 3 seconds.
Kevin Stefanski's at noon today. I'll be interested to see if they brought in any offensive linemen yesterday to work out and if there's anybody that possibly could end up either on the practice squad or maybe I don't think that there's guys out there right now to put on the active roster immediately. But part of that's going to have to depend on Wyatt Teller and how long they're going to keep him out. I mean, if he looks like he's out for 4 weeks, then you put him on the injured reserve. I also would like to hear an update on Nick Chubb and to see if there's a chance he's back next week.
Oh, no, no, no.
No, no what? I don't want the information.
I don't know, Andy. I know.
We have not heard one word about Nick Chubb. And by the way, we're not going to hear anything today.
Is that telling?
No, that's not telling. That's the Browns not wanting to say anything. They're just not saying anything. Look, it felt like he was close when the season started, or at least he was moving in the right direction from the folks that were out in Berea watching practice every day. It'd be nice to see if there's a shot that he's close.
I'm so cautious here.
Yeah, I'm not going to put words in your mouth, but on this one I will. I think you are just waiting –
you are going to wait until you hear the Browns say he's active before you'll actually believe it.
Yeah, I want to see him on the field before I believe it. And his knee was destroyed for a second time. I'm not hurrying that guy at all. Neither are they. And I'm so erring on the side of caution, it's going to be ridiculous.
If he can come back and be at 80 to 90%.
But they're running the ball 12 times anyway.
Maybe they'll run the ball more with him.
Yeah, even if which is what you don't need to do right now.
What, run Nick Chubb?
Yeah.
Why would you not need to do that?
Is just coming back from a devastating knee injury.
Well, you're not going to put him out there if you can't let him make plays.
Exactly my point. Just be patient.
I do want to get into the or question we set up here. But has the 1-2 start forced you to re-examine what you think the outcome of this year is going to be?
I would venture to say yes right now, because when you come into the season looking what the Browns were looking like, their defense was supposed to be intact. It was supposed to be extremely strong. Offensively, you go out and you make a couple acquisitions, but you didn't know what you were going to get from Deshaun Watson just yet because of his injury. So now looking at it, you're supposed to beat up on the woefully Giants, you know, and unfortunately it doesn't happen. So now you're 1-2 going into this weekend against the Raiders. And this is a scary scenario. Do you look at it and say, okay, if we're 1-3, do we pack it in? If we can get to 2-2, it's a better spot.
Well, and it doesn't help that you're playing against Gardner Minshew, who last year looked like Michael Vick. Like, listen, Gardner has cooked a couple teams through the air. He cooked you on the ground and the air through with the RPO concept. So I think that's probably fresh in the minds of most Browns fans as well.
Yeah, and that's scary right there, right? You have somebody that can run an offense really nice, but you also look at what they did last weekend too. They were supposed to beat up on a team that probably should not be in the NFL right now. But right now, both teams 1-2, you have to go out and look at it that if the Browns can win on the road, which is very hard to do in the NFL at times, that would be a huge momentum swing for the Browns.
So most years, if you start 1-2, no matter the context, I'm like, it's 3 weeks, right? Like, what the hell are we doing? What I think makes this a little more alarming actually has nothing to do with Deshaun. It's where the injuries are. Last year, I know you lost Nick Chubb last year. Guys, it's an elite running back. We're not talking about an elite pass rusher. We're not talking about, you know, I think Amari had a nice game this last year, but his separation numbers are concerning. Now you've lost Wyatt Teller. So you're guaranteed to have turnover on that offensive line. You're without, you know, who knows what's going on with Jed. And then you've got, is Jack Conklin back? And so the injuries aren't hitting like your depth guys, hitting your frontline guys. And early in the season, sometimes you can just out-talent everybody. Well, if your best players, and the Browns are still a talented team. Let's not get it twisted. They're still the team that went to the playoffs last year with five different quarterbacks, one of whom was Deshaun Watson, although I know we don't like to point that out. So at the same point, this is the time of year where you can sneak a few games just on talent alone. So I don't think it means I'm not ready to reorganize. I'm not ready to say, well, all right, they're an 8-win team if we look at the first three games. Because it's the first 3 weeks of football. It's not supposed to look pretty. It's not looking pretty around football in general. I mean, offense is down. Turnovers are up. There's so many things that go into this that aren't just in Cleveland. But I get it, man. Like, I'll be honest with you, this week it kind of hinges on that. Being able to take on the Raiders and get a win is not only crucial, but you fall to 1-3. It's just going to be a tough sell into October trying to find those next few wins, knowing that's when the gauntlet starts.
Yeah, if you go 1-3, you know, you're looking at a very uphill climb, especially against the Ravens and the Steelers right now. I think the keys right now going into this weekend, though, is you look at Deshaun Watson. Can he get off the snide a little bit and get the ball out as quickly as possible? Can he read his checks? Can the offensive line just hold just long enough for him to get rid of the ball? And then on the defensive side, you want to make sure that Myles Garrett is as healthy as possible and that you count on him as well, because he is the best player on that defensive line.
So do you agree with me or disagree with me on this? I was surprised after the way they got the crap kicked out of him on Sunday. I was surprised we didn't see, I know they just bumped up Jermaine Ifedi to the roster. I was surprised we didn't see more roster churn. with how disappointing the performance was. And a lot of it was focus, confidence, playing like a team that had been there, playing like a veteran team. I'd be really surprised if you get through September 1-3. I don't know if it's you trade for somebody. I don't know if it's you just cut somebody. If you go 1-3 in September, I mean, it's not Deshaun. Deshaun's not getting benched. That's not where this thing's going. But do I think there could be some other guys whose jobs all of a sudden are in danger, starting with like a guy like MJ Emerson, starting with maybe Ethan Posick? Yeah. Like I think we're there if you lose this game, or even if you win an uninspiring game, I think you got to start making some moves here. Not panic moves, but moves to let everybody, to basically wake that damn locker room up.
If you go 1-3, there's going to be some jobs on the line for sure. You know, and at that same point, as a pro player, you have to take the pride to make sure that you're doing what you're supposed to be doing out on the field, in the locker room, in the film room. If you go 2-2, I think everybody stays status quo. I think when you look at this right now, you go 2-2, you come back, September's out of the way, you get a couple guys, you know, that are banged up right now, not so much that are injured, but that are banged up, and you get them healthy. Yeah, then you look into October and you say, okay, can we get above 500? You get above 500, now you're going in the right direction. And little by little, that team can start to gel in the locker room. And that's all that's going to matter. If you can gel in the locker room, you're going to have a good sense.
So one of the things we talked about early in the show with the Miles news, and again, there's a lot of ambiguity here. So we've cleared it. We are not doctors. I've never played doctors on TV, although for the right amount of money, I would do it, right? As a matter of fact, for right amount of money, there's not a lot I wouldn't do. Nick Wilson can be bought. Put that out. Let the streets know that Nick Wilson can be bought and very easily. But at the same point, we talked about, does there come a point where if Miles is truly dealing with feet injury to both feet and the thigh and the Achilles, what is the, what's the math that goes into this? Obviously, this is predicated on can it get better by rest, which is we don't know. But if you're dealing with some sort of tendonitis or something related with Achilles, I would imagine rest would help. But I will say, I think that is one of the things that the deeper you get into these next three games, I think it's critical. Because I think if you're losing and Miles is playing through injuries, I'm sorry, at what point are you doing a disservice to that player? If he's in constant pain, if you don't go to him and go, listen, we love you, but we're not winning right now. We need to get you healthy so you can be the 100% dominant Miles. Like that's, I don't know that this game specifically rides on it, but I look at the next three games and I'm like, if by Philly it continues to get worse and worse, and you're not winning, I'm not doing this to a guy. He means too much to the next 5 years of Browns football. That's where we are with the next three games for the Cleveland Browns and the importance of winning.
I think from Miles' standpoint, you know, as a player, he has to understand the longevity of this. You know, we talk about the Achilles side of it. You know, what's the severity of it? We don't know that. He didn't practice today, you know, so he took some time off to heal, to rest, to get whatever treatment he needs. And ultimately, this is a big game. This is a teetering game for the Browns right now to say, okay, if Miles is going to play, what level of capacity is he at? Is he at 90%? Is he at 80%? As a fan, do we want him to be at 80% playing? You know, for me personally, I want my players to be out there that can compete. Miles is one of those guys that you need out there to compete.
So I think I might be the person that disagrees with this. And this is more about positional importance than it is. I know how important Miles is to this team. I know that he's a unicorn, but I think in the pre-show we were talking about this, and I think both you and Keith said, I think Miles is more important than Deshaun. And I've thought about it a lot. I don't think I agree. Because at the end of the day, because it's not just about Deshaun, his importance to the team and winning. One, it's tough to sit in successive seasons winning with a backup. Two, I wouldn't wish this situation with where the O-line is on any backup. If anyone's going to be able to make, you know, chicken salad out of chicken scratch, it's going to be the guy that 5 years ago was one of the top five quarterbacks in the NFL. And the other thing is, I don't think we really know what this team would do without Miles. So
I think there's this assumption they'd fall apart without Miles for a short term. I think you fall apart long term with any great player missing. I think you're selling a locker room short there.
Yeah, it's I don't know which way to take that right now, only because both players are huge. You need Deshaun Watson on the offensive side to get back to Deshaun Watson. But at the same time, for me, if you don't have Myles Garrett, though, and you look at this defense, I'm not going to say they're in disarray by any means, but they're not playing up to their standard, what we saw last year.
Mm-hmm.
That's the scary situation for me. You lose a guy like this just for a couple games, not because he's injured, but because you hear that Achilles name. That's the scary portion of it.
So for me, and maybe some of this in the back of my mind, in 216-474-0092, would Miles, if you lost him for any number of time, would that be a bigger loss than Deshaun? Because I think, because I don't mean this in a bad way. I think saying that it would be is almost the easy way out. It's just another way to kind of ding Deshaun on the way. I just don't think that a starting quarterback, I don't think an edge rusher is more important than a starting quarterback when it comes to wins and losses. And some of this is, I just know if I have to put in Obo Okoronkwo as the other edge rusher, am I concerned that there's a very clear drop from one guy to another? Of course. But Obo's still a guy who's had 5, 6, 7 sacks in a season. So you're still going to get some production out of that. And remember, Myles Garrett doesn't play 100% of the snaps anyway, because Jim Schwartz's philosophy is you're going to play him 65, 70, 75% of the time and 25% rest. And as I want to say was it week one or week two where I think Miles didn't come into the game till third downs at certain points in that game because he was dealing with a foot. So Jim likes to kind of mix up his rotations. And the reason why I bring that up is Deshaun touches that ball 100% of the time. So while some people might just be like, okay, so I'm going to get rid of an elite edge rusher, or I can get rid of a quarterback that I don't really fully trust, that's not where we are. We're talking about a guy that is, you're trying to build this offense around. And I just think quarterbacks in general are more valuable than pass rusher, especially if on one side of the ball, you're already struggling.
Well, how about we flip the script here and say if the offense can stay on the field longer, then it also helps the defense a little bit more, you know, because like you're mentioning, Nick, how Myles Garrett hasn't played a whole lot of snaps early in the season, and now he's working his way back in, knowing that he has 2 foot issues. He has a thigh issue. He has an Achilles issue. So if that's the case, if the offensive line can do their part, if Deshaun Watson can manipulate what he needs to do as a quarterback, keep that side of the ball on the field, give them some long sustained drives, be able to put some points up. Now that's going to give the defense more rest. They're going to be in a better situation. And I think ultimately that gains some credibility for both sides.
You know, it's funny you were saying that, because what an unlocked is, you are supposed to have an elite cornerback room. And so the other way to look at this is, if you don't have an elite pass rusher up front, or if it's a pass rush by committee, the best friend you can have to not having Myles Garrett is great cover corners, which you do have. The best friend you can have if your quarterback is out is a great run game. You don't have that. And even when Nick Chubb comes back, they're not bringing the run fits back from last year. So and by the way, he's also coming off his second knee injury. I know why you say Miles. I totally get it. I'm not trying to dog Miles in any way. But I do think they have the recipe that even if Miles has to go out for a little bit, you can maintain that. With Deshaun, the recipe right now is you don't have an elite run game, you don't have a great pass rush. If I think it only gets worse from here if you were missing Deshaun for a week or two. I think right now Deshaun actually, despite still not playing up to the $230 million, might actually be more important to you than Myles Garrett, which is wild to think about. But at least on defense, you've got those safety valves. On offense, you got nothing right now. It's that dude makes enough plays to win like he did in Jacksonville, or nothing. Now's one of our favorite times of the week there, Jason. This is your introduction into What is a hump day tradition here as we go out to the North Olmsted Chrysler Jeep Dodge Ram hotline? On the line is Odyssey NFL insider Ross Tucker. Insider calls brought to you by Hellman's Real Mayonnaise. Mayo game day be delicious. And Ross is going to be on the Browns Raiders call with Westwood One this weekend. Ross, who did you have to pay off to get this assignment?
No, so first of all, that was like an A-minus. On the Mayo, that was pretty good. That was like an 8.5, maybe even a 9 out of 10. I could feel that one. Mm. And then, more importantly, not for Westwood One Sunday, it's for CBS, bro.
It's on
TV. Mm. So we're gonna get a lot of tweets, you and me at Ross Tucker NFL, from people saying, he doesn't look like what I thought he would look like. That's what he looks like. I didn't know that. You know, because there's people that listen every Wednesday 4 p.m. that have no idea what I look like. And I can assure you, Sunday, 4:25 p.m. Eastern time, on every television in the land, or at least should be, you're going to see me. You're going to see I'll look as good as I can. That's the best I can do when I'm on TV.
All right. Can you work my name into the broadcast, which I think is really all that matters here?
Possibly. Yeah, we'll see how the rest of the interview goes, and I'll see, you know, that would be one where I would say something like, listen, I hear all these clowns on Cleveland Sports Talk Radio, like Nick Wilson, that always want to blame everything on the O-line or Deshaun Watson. Why can't there be like something like that?
I think that's the only way I would want you to talk about me on football. So I will ask you, though, is this Raiders game a good matchup for the Browns?
Well, there's a lot of similarities between the two teams right now. We usually find out our assignments like 3 weeks in advance, maybe 2 weeks in advance. So going into last week's game, they hadn't announced it yet, but I knew I was doing Browns-Raiders. And I looked at the schedule and thought, wow, there's a pretty good chance they'll both be 2-1. Browns are hosting the Giants. Raiders are hosting the Panthers. They were both pretty solid favorites to win those home games against winless teams. Neither one did, obviously. So they're both coming off very similarly disappointing performances, and they're both desperate for a win. And I sort of appreciate games like this because I was in these situations. I'll probably say this on Sunday, but, you know, I always looked at it as a player that when you were 500 or above, you were firmly in the playoff mix, right? Below 500, you've got some work to do. And if you think about it, there's a big difference between 2-2 and 1-3. I mean, if you come out of this game and you're 2-2 and you're the Browns at least, you're like, all right, we won two road games, not playing as well as we want to, but we're still 2-2. If you lose this game, then it is, wow, we are 1-3. We got to win two in a row just to get back to 500. So this is one of those games where both teams and both teams' fan bases are very much looking at it like, holy cow, we really got to win this game.
Hey, Ross, Nick and I talked about it earlier about Miles possibly resting, or would it make sense to rest him? What would be your opinion on the Browns trying to consider resting him?
Well, a couple things. I think it's a fair question. When's their bye? I didn't look at that yet.
That would be November 10th.
Okay, so you're not getting the value out of like back-to-back weeks or whatever. So really hard question for me to answer, Jason, not knowing how bad Miles' ailments are and exactly what his situation is. I saw where he's listed with three injuries. Here's what I would tell you. Based on watching the tape of the Giants game, I would definitely not rest him if he can still play, because he did some amazing things in that game. He's one of the best defensive players I think I've ever seen. It's just remarkable what he's capable of with that body of his. And if there's a way in which, you know, to try to manage it through the season, if maybe you take a few snaps off here and there and utilize him more for the obvious passing downs, I think that would be the better way to go about it. You know, they really need him. I mean, they're a different defense if they don't have him out there.
Ross Tucker, Odyssey NFL Insider on the North Homestead Chrysler Jeep Dodge Ram Hotline. Insider calls brought to you by Hellman's Real Mayonnaise. You can purchase a Hellman's at your local Walmart, Kroger, or grocery store to add deliciousness and creamy flavor to your game day dishes this football season. So let's talk about that Giants game for a half second here. Did we overestimate the Browns going into that game, or did we underestimate the Giants?
Probably a little bit of both. You know, I think when you look at the Giants, they were better than I thought a lot of people thought they were. I mean, Neighbors is an absolute star. And I think Devin Singletary, as great as Saquon started, I think Devin Singletary does some really positive things. By far the most surprising and or concerning aspect of it, if you are the Browns, is just the pass protection right now. I mean, it is ugly, and it's not good enough, and it's not all because of the injuries. You know, I'll probably highlight this at some point early in the game, but they're really struggling to pick up stunts, twists, blitzes. I mean, that's an ugly tape. You know, and I always do the preseason offensive line rankings. I had Brown's top five. They certainly did not look anywhere near like a top five offensive line on Sunday. And I would say that was even before guys started dropping like flies.
When you look at that offensive line that you were just mentioning, Ross, Deshaun Watson probably needs to get rid of the ball faster, though, at times. Would you agree with me there?
Yeah, for sure. Now, I will say this. You know, it's interesting because watching him out there, that was my perception too. But then I watched, man, there were a bunch of times where he had very little shot. Now, there's other times, I think Jacksonville game, I noticed this more maybe, where I do feel like he held it too long. But in particular in the Giants game, man, I mean, they were on him quick. And there were times where I thought he did a decent job to be able to get out of those and find some space and buy some time. I'll give him credit for this, too. He is tough as nails because he's taking some shots. But, yes, I would like to see him get rid of it sooner a few times. I think the bigger concern, Jay, is that, you know, there's multiple open receivers where it feels like he's throwing the ball, like, 10 feet over their head. I mean, some really, really, I thought, ugly misses from him in that Giants game.
Ross, looking to two teams struggling in this division right now, the 1-2 Browns or the 0-3 Cincinnati Bengals, which team do you actually think is in a better spot?
Good question. I think that the Bengals can still hang their hat on their offense and Burrow, and I think the Browns on some level can still hang their hat on the defense. They're both banged up in different ways. I'd probably say the Browns because they already have that one win, right? That's a whole game ahead of them. And because, yeah, I can't remember who the Bengals are playing this week, but certainly you know, the Browns have a very winnable game against the Raiders. So I'll say the Browns right now, also thinking that they'll get some of these guys back to healthy and Chubb and Joku and whatever.
Ross, I know we started asking a question about Deshaun earlier, but one of the conversations we had yesterday was about just trying to figure out, like, the O-line versus holding the ball too long and trying to get clarity on Deshaun. This season, outside of making the playoffs, is about having a definitive answer. Like, yes, he can get back and he's taking steps to be that guy, or even if he's under contract, you need a backup plan, a real backup plan going forward.
given what we've seen from the first 3 weeks, is your confidence shaken that even if Deshaun plays 17 games this year, the Browns are going to be able to get a clear answer on whether he can get back to being that guy or not?
So I think it is a fair question. And I'll say I think it's a fair question because the other aspects, in particular the offensive line, is not operating at a high enough level to really be able to give it a clear indicator. So I think there's some possibility of that. I guess I would argue their early returns are certainly not good. You know, I think if you're a Browns fan, obviously you want to win and all that stuff. I think you got to hope that the offensive line can just perform at a high enough level or competent enough level that you can really get a great definitive read on Deshaun. And, you know, I never like throwing offensive line coaches under the bus because I just don't. I don't really know what they're teaching the guys. I don't know if the guys are messing up themselves or whatever the situation may be. I will just say, you know, I saw some concerning things on tape from the Browns' offensive line. Some of it might be the guys moving around, but I don't remember seeing a lot of these things, you know, when Bill Callahan was there. And so that's something that was notable for me and that, you know, might come up during the broadcast as well. I mean, there's a reason why he's considered by most people to be the best offensive line coach in the NFL.
Ross, when you look at the whole AFC, would you say that the Bills are by far the only team out there that can compete?
Well, they've been by far the best team so far. And I'm assuming when you say compete, you mean like compete with the Chiefs?
Well, you look at the Chiefs right now. The Chiefs, their defense is struggling. Yes, they've won the games, but their defense isn't anywhere up to par of being that Super Bowl caliber team. The Bills, when you look at as a whole right now, they've done everything they've asked to do.
Yeah, I mean, I do think it's fair to say that the Bills have been by far the best team so far, but I don't know. I mean, Chiefs are still 3-0. They've still won back-to-back Super Bowls. You know, I'll believe somebody beats them in January when I see it, but certainly, you know, I've called all three Bills games so far. First one TV, the next two on radio. I mean, the last two Bills games I called, guys, they had their backups in the fourth quarter. It was Trubisky time. I mean, it felt like a preseason game. That doesn't happen in the NFL, let alone back-to-back games. It's extremely impressive what we're seeing from the Bills right now, extremely. I mean, right now they're clearly the best team in the AFC, and the Vikings are clearly the best team in the NFC. But as you guys know, there's a long, long way to go.
Ross, Falcons owner Arthur Blank put himself in the Ring of Honor. Charming or Chach?
It's a good question.
Getting a lot of those today. I feel like I'm earning that name plug this weekend when you're on the Browns Raiders call.
Well, you know, it's true because usually your questions are garbage.
Agreed.
And usually, like, you just bang the Deshaun drum 10 times, and then every once in a while you'll throw us the fancy question in there, and it's like, oh my gosh.
Yep.
Sports Talk Radio 101, here we go. But these questions have been merited. I'm going to say charming. I'll tell you why. Because he's a charming man. He's a wonderful man by all accounts. And he was going to go in the Ring of Honor after he passed. Right? Like the next owner or whoever or his children would do that. What's the point of that? You know? I mean, what's the point of not getting a chance to experience it? It's funny because I know every once in a while I've told you about myfrontpagestory.com, and I'm truly not just doing this as a plug, Nick, although I know you'll think that it is.
Because I know you.
Yeah, exactly. 1,000%. So, but, you know, the first time we did a story for someone, it was because my brother-in-law's father passed. And so I read the obituary, and I thought, and the obituary doesn't really say what he was like as a guy. It's just like, he went to school here, this was his job, blah, blah, blah. So I thought, we should do this instead of having as a better obituary. And then I thought, no. Like, wouldn't it be better if these people, everybody got these while they're still alive? So that's, like, I literally, Nick, and it hasn't gone real well, to be honest with you, but I literally have tried to get partnerships with senior care facilities and senior care communities, because I want all of these people to have stories written about them and their lives from myfrontpagestory.com while they're still alive, so they can actually read it and enjoy it and have it in their room at their senior care facility or community or whatever. Because it doesn't do them any good if we write this amazing story about them after they've passed. So I think it's charming. I'm in favor of it. And I know you, and you would have done it 20 years ago if you were blank.
Way to high road me there, by the way. Real quick, what's your read on the UNLV quarterback situation?
Ooh, you have come to the right place, my friend. You've come to the right place. I think I called his third game ever or fourth game ever. Would have been March or April of 2001. He was a true freshman. I called the Patriot League championship game when he was at Holy Cross. And there's a lot to it, right? First and foremost, number one, I don't care what UNLV says. Somebody promised him $100,000. He didn't just make that up, okay? Like, he didn't just make it up. He goes there. This is his last year of eligibility, okay? He is a very good college quarterback. He doesn't throw it well enough to be a professional quarterback. So this is really the last year where he can get money for his skill set. So do you think he wanted to leave UNLV? Do you think this is something that he wanted to have happen? Absolutely not. They're 3-0. They've won two games against Big 12 Power 4 teams on the road. They're top 25 for the first time in school history. They have pole position for the playoffs. He said to them a number of times, where's the $100,000 that you promised me? They kept saying it, we'll give it to you. Which, by the way, like, the guy that comes out now and says that they were never promised it, like, that doesn't make sense. Why would they keep saying to him, you'll get it, right? So I think he realized, number one, it's not right. The whole program, the coach is going to get a Power 4 job. They're all benefiting greatly from what they're running him, by the way, like 15 times a game. You're getting the crappy out of him. They're benefiting greatly from this, and yet they're not going to give him what they promised him to go there. He had other options to go to other schools. He picked UNLV for several reasons, including the money. And so he's being very smart right now, because what he did these first three games, he'll get $500,000 plus from a Power 4 school to be their quarterback next year, because he's preserving that year of eligibility. It's very, very smart. I mean, first of all, if someone says they're going to give you $100,000 and then they don't, you absolutely can leave. I think they thought he was bluffing. I don't think they really thought the Holy Cross kid would do it. I don't think they really thought he would do it. But he called him on the bluff. Now he can train. He can get to the next school in the spring, and everybody knows he's available. And he'll get between $500,000 to probably $1.5 million to be the starting quarterback at a Power 4 school next year. And so he's absolutely doing the right thing. And if you're UNLV, man, somehow find the $97,000. I mean, not only, first of all, you have a chance to have an unbelievably special season, number one. Number two, it's just a bad look for everybody. It's a bad look for the program. It's a bad look for the head coach. They're probably not going to be as successful now. I mean, but it's where we are in college football. And the whole thing just makes me sad. Like, I'm so sad for him that he has to do this and his family. I'm incredibly sad for his teammates. Think about how excited
Ross,
all the students are,
Ross,
all the players are.
Real quick,
everybody,
buddy. This is
what they're doing.
This is great stuff, but we got a boogie here. We're up against an update here. But thank you so much, buddy. I look forward to hearing my name on Sunday on CBS.
I'll see what I can do, man. See ya.